wait till a big old rig comes rolling through 18 wheelers, stand on front of that. See what they say about your big old protest.
How can you go and bomb a country and claim that we liberated the people in that country?
I left Iraq without their knowledge, without their approval, at the risk of my life and my family's life. Does that sound like I support them?
Remember that this is almost the same people who ran the country in the Reagan-Bush 1 administrations. It's sort of astonishing.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Friday, April 11th, 2003. I'm Verna Avery Brown. U.S.-led forces expanded their control over Iraq today, and as Mosul, the largest city in the north, fell without a fight, Saddam Hussein and his sons are, quote, either dead or they're running like hell, said General Tommy Franks, top commander of the invasion of Iraq. Looting swiftly erupted in Mosul. Hospital ambulances were taken at gunpoint, and lawlessness continued to plague Baghdad 3 days after the collapse of the regime. Increasingly, U.S. troops in the capital turned their efforts to restoring order, although pockets of resistance and suicide bombers remain constant threats. President Bush said today he doesn't know whether Saddam Hussein is dead or alive, but, quote, I know he's no longer in power, unquote. Bush declined to declare victory in the war in Iraq. I want to hear our commander say we have achieved the clear objectives that we have set out. That's when we will say this is over, Bush told reporters after visiting wounded servicemen and women in two military hospitals. U.S. Marines have unearthed an elaborate underground network of laboratories, complete with drums and drums of low-grade uranium at a site located underneath the Tuwaitha Nuclear Center just south of Baghdad, International Atomic Energy Agency Director General Mohammed al-Baradei, according to the Associated Press, was clearly wary of any coalition claims and said that any alleged discoveries of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq would have to be verified by UN inspectors to generate required credibility. After working as an Iraqi nuclear scientist from 1968 until 1998, Iman Kaduri dismissed the significance of the nuclear waste that was found by the forces this week. Kaduri asserted that this site was the dump site for the nuclear waste accumulated from Iraq's many years of nuclear research. Peace Watch asked him earlier today whether this was indeed the smoking gun the U.S. was looking for.
No. It's no gun and no smoke. This site has been well known to the IAEA inspectors. They have seen it. They were there last on February 6th, I guess, and they sealed it. They know what's inside it. It's a burial mound where we keep our radioactive waste for the past 35 years. We've had a nuclear program for 35 years now. And this is simply most of the liquid waste, and that uranium lowly enriched was all accounted for by the IAEA. They have inventories. They have reams of books on that stuff. There's nothing new on it. Had any of them been with the American soldiers barging into that site, they would have told them that already. Now, the point is, if their soldiers do break any of the seals, well, they've already broken the door, that's for sure. It was a stainless steel door. But if they break any of the seals on the containers themselves, mm-hmm. and if they break the drums that contained radioactive waste, well, they will be damaged. And if extensive spillage or release, the whole area should be cleared, definitely. And depending on the amount of how much they're going to waste themselves, it could be a bit dangerous for the surrounding couple of villages.
Mm. Well, clearly they've broken the seals if they know what's in the containers, in the drums, I would imagine, unless they're marked somehow. But so what kind of harm might be done to the soldiers themselves and to the neighboring environment if they have opened these containers?
Well, this despairing Rambo tactics, if I were them, I would have simply picked up the phone. There are phones, you know. They could have called the IAEA. Hey, we have found a site. What do you think? Shall we go in? Do you know about it? And that would have been quite sufficient, I would think. The IAEA say, hey, we know this whole site. Or they would have given them instructions on what to do, exactly how to enter. But if they do it on their own, they take the whole responsibility themselves. Nobody else is going to be responsible for that. Themselves only.
So have they perhaps exposed themselves and the environment to something that could prove to be quite harmful?
Well, I read in one account that the Geiger counter detectors they were using were screaming off their head as soon as they went in there. Well, if they have no protection on, then that is radiation hitting them. Now, how much is, they should look at their detectors and see how much they got. And there are certain levels permissible per day that they can get. If they stay longer than that period, they will be affected, yes.
And so what about to the environment? Is this, what is the area surrounding this in this particular part of the country there?
The whole area is in a nuclear research center, and there are no people there. It was protected by security. That site is a mound. It's a burial mound. It's well, there are signs on it. There's a steel door. They couldn't break it without some special tools. Now, if they open any of the containers themselves, and depending on how much they opened, how many, and if it is radioactive waste or there are gases there, radioactive gases that could be released in the air, and depending on the amounts, you know, I just cannot tell until somebody knows how much has been released.
But do you have any kind of expert advice about what releasing that kind of radiation into the environment, what kind of impact it might have on any neighboring communities, people that are moving through that area, if it's picked up by the wind? And
yes, but I'm even more worried about something else.
What's
radioactive.
That?
Americans, even though in 1991 war, when they dropped all these depleted uranium shells, and the cancer in the area of Basra and the south is tenfold in the past 13 years. This has been well documented. Many babies are born very, very deformed. Young people are refusing to get married these days in Basra so as not to have deformed babies. It's that serious. Yet, the Americans, criminally, yet once again, in the battle for the airport in Baghdad, they use the same depleted uranium bullets again. And they're going to contaminate Baghdad also now. And have cancer upon the 5 million people there. This is really war criminal. Aside from using their anti-personnel cluster bombs on civilians in Hilla, again they use depleted uranium in the airport. This is really reprehensible. Mm. Utmost reprehensible. It's horrible. This is really criminal. They knew the effect. They used it the first time around, and everybody was up against them, the WHO, the health organizations, and the evidence is there. 10 times the cancer rate. And the pictures on the internet. We had a very active program for 30 years.
An active nuclear weapons
program? No. Active nuclear program. The active nuclear weapon program was only for 10 years. After Israel bombed our research reactors in 1981, that's when we turned weapon. A diplomatic decision was taken to go weapon-wise. 1981, mm-hmm. Immediately after Israel's bombing. And it lasted for 10 years. That's the weapon program. But since 1965, we've had a nuclear reactor running in Iraq, in Baghdad, in that site. You would expect to have some waste. We had all kinds of research being done there. But the fuel cells themselves that had any potential for any kind of metal reuse have been removed in 1992 by the inspectors and sent back to the country of origin, France and Russia. And they made sure of that. Mm-hmm. And they have inventoried every single barrel there. Mm-hmm. And how much it weighs and what's in it. So Americans could have easily not be arrogant and just have called and found out and not expose themselves to these things.
So are, Mr. Kadori, are the troops, are the Marines likely to find any undiscovered, unidentified, undocumented evidence of a nuclear weapons program now that Saddam Hussein and his administration has left?
1991, when the bomb started to fall, first war, that's when the whole nuclear weapon program ceased to function. I've been saying this for now 6-7 months. We've been writing about it, talking about it. And what is really ominous is that Cheney, one day before Bush declares his ultimatum 48 hours, one day before that, Cheney comes up and he said, Al-Baradei and the IAEA are wrong. That when they say there is no nuclear weapon program rejuvenation, he says that the American intelligence has evidence of nuclear weapons. He is lying, like L-Y-I-N-G, to the American people. Where are these nuclear weapons that his intelligence has told him about? They have been in Baghdad now, in Tuwaita, all over Baghdad. Where are these nuclear weapons that Cheney, one day before the war, claimed that's why they're going to war for? $80 billion for what? Where are the weapons of mass destruction that they claim? They lied to the American people. And who's going to account for that? Where are the world war crime tribunals? You wage a war falsely? Kill thousands of people? Good Lord. Where are the weapons of mass destruction, I ask? Why did you go to war, the American people go to war? For what? Change a man? Sorry, I can't go anymore.
I understand. Sir, one final question. On the record, did you support the administration of Saddam Hussein?
Ma'am, I left Iraq without their knowledge, without their approval, at the risk of my life and my family's life. Does that sound like I support them?
Imad Kaduri, former nuclear scientist for the Iraqi government for 30 years. U.S. Secretary of War Donald Rumsfeld said that there is no humanitarian crisis in Iraq, but that's a stark contrast to reports coming out of the region from humanitarian aid workers. Voices in the Wilderness, a Chicago-based humanitarian organization, has been in Iraq for weeks to witness the conditions of the Iraqi people. Ramzi Kisiya, a peace activist and member of Voices in the Wilderness, left Baghdad recently for Jordan. Peace Watch spoke with him yesterday about what he considers a crisis unfolding in Baghdad.
The scenes that we're seeing today from Baghdad are something that I haven't personally experienced. But we do have a team of 14 people who are still there. And I have to say that we're very, very worried for our people who are there. We're very worried for the Iraqi people, because you're absolutely right. The dog and pony show that we saw yesterday from central Baghdad is not the case in the majority of the town. I was struck that we saw hundreds of Iraqis celebrating the overthrow of Saddam in a city of 5 million people, which is not to say that the majority of people in Iraq don't welcome the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. He was a terrible dictator, a very violent and oppressive regime. But you did not see 5 million people in the streets of Baghdad. And you have to ask yourself why. And then the news coming out about the hospitals closing because they're worried about looters in Al-Kindia Hospital. Al-Kindia is one of the central trauma hospitals in Iraq, and it must be packed. I mean, absolutely packed. If they were getting 100 casualties an hour just a few days ago, they are absolutely packed. And to have looters going through Al-Kindi today is just appalling. And where are the U.S. troops, really? During the war, we did go to hospitals every single day. Al-Yarmouk and Al-Kindi were the two main trauma hospitals, so we were there several times. We were visiting with the handful of aid agencies that were still active in Iraq at the time, CARE International, Doctors Without Borders, ICRC. But as I say, my group left a few days before the U.S. really began to attack civilian areas as hard as they did. So we were seeing dozens of casualties a day. It came up to hundreds just a few days after we left.
The U.S. has asserted the invasion of Iraq was necessary in order to liberate the Iraqi people. In light of the rising number of civilian deaths, we asked Kaseya whether there was a window of opportunity for the U.S. to be seen as a liberator rather than as colonizers.
Yeah, you know, I think that while the vast majority of people in Iraq do welcome the overthrow of Saddam Hussein, that doesn't mean that they want to turn over their country lock, stock, and barrel to ExxonMobil or to George Bush, for that matter. And I think it's very telling that today U.S. troops were not doing anything to stop the looting of hospitals, let alone government ministries, but that they were guarding very closely the Ministry of Oil and were not letting anybody loot that particular ministry. Mm. It really makes me wonder why the United States is in Iraq in the first place. I mean, we're going to have to see. We're going to have to see what George Bush does over the coming days and weeks. But picking a strong Zionist ex-general, Jay Gardner, to run Iraq is not encouraging. The fact that they are allowing all this looting is not encouraging. The heavy fighting in Adamiya, which is a residential neighborhood in Baghdad, is not encouraging. Mm. I'm really very worried. We're in the middle of a humanitarian disaster. Iraq, prior to this war, was suffering from a humanitarian catastrophe brought on by sanctions, where we were seeing thousands of people die every single month because of shortages in medicine, because of diseases that were running rampant. And right now, what aid that was coming through to Iraq has collapsed. The government system in Iraq has collapsed. And there really is a strong danger for chaos throughout the country and a humanitarian catastrophe that could be unprecedented.
Hmm. Ramzi Kassia joining us from Amman, Jordan. Ramzi, with the city literally torn apart, bridges blown up, no water, little food, scattered bombing continuing, I would imagine people are basically unable to go to work to earn the money that they would need to feed their families. Is this overstating the case? Where will the aid workers begin when they do return?
Yeah, right now everything is shut down. And even before the war started, most people in Iraq were dependent on government food rations. The country has been reduced to the biggest breadline in world history as a result of 12 years of sanctions. So we're going to have to reestablish the Oil for Food program. We're going to have to reestablish that food distribution system right now. And that's not happening. And it's not going to happen until the fighting stops until there's relative calm.
Ramzi Kassia of Voices in the Wilderness speaking with us from Amman, Jordan. He just left Baghdad about a week ago. As bombs continue to rain down across Iraq, perhaps no one can sympathize better with Iraqis than the people of Afghanistan. PeaceWatch spoke earlier this week with Tahmina Fayal, a spokesperson for the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan, who listens with disbelief as the Bush administration talks of liberating the people of Iraq.
Obviously, by no means we can say that Afghanistan and especially women in that country have been liberated. How can you go and bomb a country and claim that we liberated the people in that country, especially when one fundamentalist terrorist regime such as Taliban is replaced with another fundamentalist and terrorist regime or element such as the Northern Alliance, who are responsible for so much atrocities, death and destruction of our country and people from 92 to 96, and that's a known fact. There are those atrocities and crimes have been documented by Human Rights Watch, by Amnesty International, even the State Department has some information about that. But once again, they enable and empower those people. And that is the biggest fear about Iraq, that, okay, they got rid of Saddam Hussein, but the person who is going to replace him maybe is not all that different than him. Certainly is not someone who will be considered a representative by the population in that country. And so therefore, one cannot say that they can liberate our countries by installing their own puppet regimes.
Do you have family or friends in Afghanistan who lived through the recent war that you've been in contact with?
Yes, I do. There are some family members, but also many Rawa members who have left in Afghanistan, still are based there.
What are they telling you about the daily conditions of life in Afghanistan these days?
Well, they say how disappointing the situation is, that after the topple of the Taliban, people certainly celebrated that. On one hand, it meant the end of a very oppressive regime, especially for women. But as soon as they realized that the Northern Alliance elements became the major players of the interim and the current transitional government, that smashed the dream of people for stable and peaceful and especially democratic Afghanistan. The report that we hear is that women are not safe, girls are not safe to go to school, although now they can go to school or some women can work, but the lack of safety and security is the biggest obstacle. 12 girls in school were attacked in less than a year. Two ministers in the government were killed. Even the head of the country, Mr. Karzai, has been threatened. Basically, no woman and no man who is not in support or in agreement with the policies of the government, and especially with the Northern Alliance elements, can voice their opinion. There's no freedom of speech, no freedom of forming political parties or thoughts and beliefs. Kabul University students, their protest for food and electricity and other basic needs was responded with some bullets that killed six students. So this is the kind of democracy that we have in Afghanistan. The images that we saw, people celebrating the departure of the Taliban, that was very true. People were very happy about that, but they did not show the other side that was people mourning when the soldiers of the Northern Alliance arrived, and people could not forget the 1992 to 1996 era.
In your opinion, has the war with Iraq drawn needed attention away from the post-war reconstruction of Afghanistan and the hunt for Osama bin Laden?
Absolutely. While I think that the U.S., right after they attacked Iraq, they had one of their biggest military operations in Afghanistan as well. But generally, the people of Afghanistan, once again, have been forgotten. In the media, we don't really hear much about Afghanistan, even not so much about making a connection between Afghanistan and Iraq and making Afghanistan a good example of what will happen in Iraq. You know, talking about the failure of the United States toward the promises that they made to the people of Afghanistan, and obviously now everyone is disappointed that none of them has been put into practice, and that what will foretell us about Iraq.
Tamina, as an Afghan woman, what goes through your mind when you see the images of the bombings of Baghdad and throughout Iraq?
Well, I think that the people of Afghanistan, especially women and children, more than any other nation, can feel the suffering of Iraqi people and express solidarity with them. And that's what Rawa, luckily, once again, has been in the forefront of women's movement in Afghanistan, that we staged a demonstration in Pakistan to condemn the U.S. bombing and attack and express our solidarity with the innocent people of Iraq. Last year I was here when the U.S. started bombing Afghanistan. And again, this year that I'm here, it's bombing Iraq. For me, it actually has pretty much this, I have pretty much the same feeling. I think that the major concern was the bombing and killing innocent people. Whether that happened in Afghanistan or in Iraq, it is all the question of killing innocent civilians, and that's obviously very, very heartbreaking.
Tamina Fayal is a spokesperson for the Revolutionary Association of Women of Afghanistan. As the war in Iraq continues and threatens to expand to neighboring Syria and Iran, anti-war activists across the country and around the world are continuing their calls for a peaceful resolution to the conflict. In big cities and small towns alike, they're holding regular protests, vigils, and demonstrations, employing all sorts of creative tactics to make sure that their voices get heard. Montgomery County, Maryland, is preparing to hold a town hall meeting this Sunday to address the domestic cost of the war and the effects on the county's economy. Reem Kadhuta, Peace Watch's correspondent at Pacifica Station WPFW in Washington, spoke today with Linda Shade, a former candidate for the Maryland House of Delegates and the organizers of the Montgomery County Coalition Against the War.
About 6 weeks ago, I began to see that there were many different groups in the county that were organizing against the war. So we began to have conversations about how we could be more effective with our local legislators, influencing them to take some action and communicate to our federal representatives that there was quite a bit of anti-war sentiment in the county. The people who are on the county council these days were very much funded by what I would call developer Democrats. This is definitely not the progressive side of the Democratic Party that's represented in our county council. The Montgomery County Coalition Against the War is 18 organizational members now. I come from the Green Party, and I also work with an organization called the Campaign for Fresh Air and Clean Politics, which works on budget issues. There are Gray Panthers. There's the Maryland Arab American Committee. There's the Forest Estates for Peaceful Solutions. We have Coalition, the Montgomery County Students for Peace and Justice, which is all 25 of our high schools that have organized and done walkouts, Jews for Peace and Justice in Palestine. We were all kind of working on our individual efforts. And the first thing that evolved was that the Green Party started assisting the Interfaith Peace Campaign to gather signatures to petition our county council to pass an anti-war resolution. And we were planning this town hall meeting as a way to push our county council officials along because they were very afraid about coming out against the war. During our planning, the bombing began. Of course, we felt that the need for this anti-war resolution was more important than ever, but our county council officials were more uncomfortable talking about it than before. And now we are facing yet another another readjust because of this claim that the war is over. And, of course, we would argue that the war isn't over. And even if it was, we have always been, from the beginning, against the invasion and the occupation of Iraq. And I think that represents a lot of the peace movement, not just Montgomery County.
It's reality on the ground. The United States troops and the UK troops are there, and they're in Baghdad, they're in different cities.
Well, one of the things that I think we need to focus on now is that President Bush will surely be coming back to the Congress asking for further appropriations for this U.S. occupation of Iraq. And so I think that people and communities should move towards insisting that their legislators do not participate in further bankrupting this country in order to prosecute this war.
You're talking about wanting to address at the town hall meeting the cost of this war on the county directly.
Yes.
Do you have any figures that would represent the relationship between this war, coming occupation, and your county?
Yes. You can go and actually find out how much the war will cost your county by going to nationalpriorietiesproject.org. And we looked up Montgomery County, and it turns out that our portion of the war budget is $390 million. And incredibly, that's almost exactly what the county is facing in its budget crisis. Furthermore, Maryland's portion of the war burden is $1.7 billion, and that is to the penny the budget deficit that we are facing in the state of Maryland. And that's incredible when you look at the fact that our mental health clinics are closing. You know, we have needs for health care, and that's exactly what's being cut. You know, we have needs for firefighters. That's exactly what's being cut. And you have to also understand that Montgomery County is a pretty wealthy county, and we have a 10-year backlog in school construction. We have desperate needs for transportation. There's the first responders who are being cut, but there's also basic social services that are suffering, and we're spending this money on an illegal war. It's unconscionable. I was recently at a National League of Cities conference, and states and localities are struggling. 40 states have cut back their school year. In Oregon, they have cut, I believe, 6 weeks off their school year. In Montgomery County, we are facing charging for ambulance services. This has a very direct impact on our communities, and we need to realize that it's a threat. Even if you don't care about the horrible moral implications of killing in Iraq, this is affecting our communities in a very direct way. This Bush administration is really bankrupting the nation.
You have worked in the politics. You're talking about the Bush administration. Did all of this just come with Bush?
No, of course, American foreign policy has been troubled for quite some time. It's very clear that the Democrats and the Republicans are corporate-backed parties. It's very clear that the Democrats have not made any significant showing to stand up against this war. It's such an opportunity to reconnect with traditional Democratic constituencies by standing up and being against the war. And there's a failure of leadership there. And I would encourage people to look for alternatives. We are continuing to try and think creatively about how to move our county council legislature toward making a statement against the war, because we feel that it's important for the education of residents in Montgomery County. And we also feel like it's very important for us to send a message to the national level. We feel very frustrated with Congress, and we sort of feel like, well, our local legislators are still our voice. We have more access to them.
So why do you think the town hall meeting will make a difference?
We very much have a local focus. We want to talk about the economic impact that this war is having on the county and state level. We want to talk about the security impact that it has, because I believe that communities in the Washington, D.C. area have a special vulnerability to increased terrorist attack. This war policy does increase anti-American sentiments around the world, and we also want to talk about the human cost of the war. We certainly have a large Arab community. We have a large Muslim community. We have people in our community who experienced significant harassment during the first Gulf War. And we want to educate our local legislators because they feel like this is not an issue for them to take a position on. And I understand that vulnerability, having been a local candidate for office before. Furthermore, people in Montgomery County also are very much aware that Iraq is the sort of the victim this week. And whether it's Syria or Iran, it's very clear that the Bush administration is planning permanent war. People certainly feel like it's a colonial imperialist war. And it's very interesting, again, when you look at the different constituencies involved in our coalition. Yes, it's peace activists, but it's also people who are outraged uniquely at where the country is now. Yes, our town hall meeting is on Sunday, April 13th. It's at 2 o'clock. It'll run till about 4. It's in the county office building on the third floor. And please see our website, which is www.montgomeryagainstthewar.org. Thank you.
Linda Shade, an organizer with the Anti-War Coalition of Montgomery County, for Pacifica's Radio Network, reporting from WPFW in Washington, D.C., I'm Reem Katkhuda.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.